As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
Hello, I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this is The Game Podcast, the podcast that told you Manchester City would win the title, the podcast that told you Wigan would always scrape out of trouble, and the podcast that predicted a bright future for Big Ek McLeish. Well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. This week, we have a stellar lineup of guests for you, featuring international man of mystery and CNN World Sport host Pedro Pinto, who's wearing a black shirt, Tony Evans, fresh from a trip to Wembley to watch his beloved Chelsea, and, of course, from beautiful downtown Ripondon, it's Oliver Kay. Later on, we're going to be discussing the incredible goal machine called Messi. But first, let's kick on with the football and the oldest cup competition in the world, something we call the FA Cup Final. Ollie, I want to start with you with the FA Cup final. It looked to me like it was a pretty cagey first hour. Now, if I caught a little bit on TV of crazy Claudio Ranieri, who said he expected an Italian final in the first half hour. Nice to see Claudio doing nothing to dispel all those lazy old stereotypes. But it sort of was, right?
Yeah, it was, as you say, cagey. I thought Liverpool were particularly cautious in the way they started, and Chelsea hadn't got that early goal. I thought they were just had Liverpool where they wanted them, and were content to soak up what little pressure there was and to counter-attack. I thought Chelsea were very, very comfortable until Liverpool, in desperation, 2-0 down, sent on Andy Carroll.
Well, Tony, that was, we talked a little bit in the car, Andy Carroll, that kind of changed things, hindsight being 2020. Would you have started him?
Well, I don't think it's hindsight. I mean, I think there were a few of us who were quite surprised at the team selection. I think Dalglish got it completely wrong. Certainly, Bellamy and Suarez never troubled Chelsea. Bellamy was too deep for much of the first half. And then, you know, the difference it made when Liverpool had an outlet ball to Carroll. And the thing is, Carroll has been getting to the pace of the game with Liverpool over the past 6 weeks, 2 months. And he's integrated himself into the passing game more and more. And, you know, if ever there was a day to play him, a £35 million player, I know that price tag's going to be the millstone around his neck. But if ever there was a day to do it, it was Saturday. And certainly, come on, he transformed the game. And, you know,
Who would you have dropped to make way for?
I wouldn't have played Bellamy in a game like that.
When we went and shuttled Henderson wide?
Well, yeah, you know, it's. But I mean, there were a number of options you could have done. You know, it's. I mean, Spearing looked completely out of his depth. You know.
Yeah, but you need a holding midfielder, right?
Well, you do, but I mean, he doesn't look as if he's the right one. I mean, you've got to change the shape around. The bottom line is, Kenny got the tactics of the team wrong.
Are you gonna? You're known for a bit of Kenny bashing, Pedro. Are you going to be as harsh on Kenny as Tony was?
You can't expect an open, creative game in midfield when you don't have those kind of players on both sides. And when it comes to Liverpool, we've been saying it all season, a lot of those guys there in the centre of the park where you're supposed to make a difference just don't have the quality to do so. Whether it's a Spearing who'll run and who'll fight, but who really doesn't offer that much when he has the ball, whether there's a Henderson when you keep on expecting him to do something different and he doesn't, whether it's Gerrard, who I still think is completely out of form. You can't expect these guys to perform miracles if they don't have the quality to do so, with the exception of Gerrard, of course, but right now he's not the same player he was.
Ollie, Pedro, there's a bit of a damning assessment of the lack of creativity in the midfield of Liverpool, but also of Chelsea. Do you subscribe to that?
I certainly subscribe to it with Liverpool. I mean, I was sort of pondering what the Liverpool team would be beforehand, and you know, normally with cup finals, you're thinking, God, who would you leave out? Who would you leave out? And I think with Liverpool, it was a struggle to get to eight or nine players that you'd want on the team sheet. I think Chelsea went through a similar spell, but a few months ago. But a lot of their players, people like Mikel and Kalou, have gone from being spare parts to performing important roles within a squad. Lampard is playing far better than he was, and with those players playing well, it gives Mata a platform to play. I'm not saying that Chelsea were scintillating by any means, and I thought for the final half hour they looked dead on the feet almost, but they have better quality through their squad. That's pretty clear.
Before we get back to Chelsea, I just want to take a little aside to Peter Cech, who I think has been very good the second half of the season. After, the funny thing is we tend to anoint people like, Ashley Cole is the best left back in the world. I've been hearing it since Euro 2004, and there's been times when he has been, times when he hasn't been. And Peter Cech as well, in this country, crowned him the best goalkeeper in the world. But I think it's pretty obvious that for probably the best part of the last 3 years, he hasn't been anywhere near as good as he was before. Well, your mate Stephen Hunt kicked him in the head. But, Tom, I want to ask you, that Cech save, television replays suggest that probably it didn't cross the line from the Carroll header. Steve Nicol, I was on a show with him the other day, and he said, no, it definitely did cross the line. It's obvious to anybody who can see. I think it's... He might be slightly biased in this one, but the point is, it's inconclusive. This is just the whole goal line technology argument all over again, because that could well have been given. And the fact that it wasn't given, he suggested, I think he might be some validity there, the officials had no idea if that ball crossed the line or not, and because they weren't sure, they didn't give it. Is that right?
Well, yeah. My initial instinct being there was it's a great save. I don't think I've seen a...
So your initial instinct was different from Kenny's?
Well, yeah, but then again, did you see his reaction? He didn't look. He didn't look as if he was celebrating with absolute conviction.
Right.
I think they got it right, and I think it's one of those situations where there's been no conclusive pictures to show. And goal line technology. Well, I suppose it might. It might solve situations like that. It'd be interesting to see if there is a viable alternative that would make definitive decisions in situations like that. But the one thing I always keep saying is we know, and Pedro knows from American football, we've seen the instant replay, and they've come down to milliseconds and freeze frame and incidents, and you lose the spirit of the game. Plus, they still get it wrong. It's amazing. They still make the wrong decisions at times.
Well, of course, goal line technology, though, to be fair, it would be different from replays. There are other ways to do it without replays that chips and sensors and all
exactly.
that jazz.
But when I ask you, you have to prove that technology works, that sort of technology, and we haven't seen it in action yet, have we?
No, but our friends at FIFA are testing them, and we all trust them to do a good job to get conclusive
answers. They've done so well so far.
Anybody have any theory as to why Peter Cech is playing a lot better now?
Defenders in front of him playing a lot better. I think the security, it goes from the goalkeeper to the defenders and back again. I think Chelsea are defending it a lot better.
Yeah, Ollie, do you really buy that though? Because I'm a devil's advocate. I'm going to go against my nature here for a second. But the year Chelsea won the double, the defenders were playing pretty well, I thought, and Peter Cech wasn't. And that save. Surely a save like that, which he wasn't making until recently, that doesn't have much to do with the defenders, does it?
Well, no. It's not really a case of making it a save that everybody can say, oh, he's playing well now because he made a brilliant save. I'm sure he makes that kind of save often in training. He is a very good goalkeeper. I've found it a little bit strange at times where things have filtered out of Chelsea about them maybe looking for a new goalkeeper, and that maybe Courtois, who's on loan to Atletico, maybe he was being groomed to replace Cech sooner rather than later. I find that rather strange, because although we can say Cech hasn't been quite at the form that made him one of the top few keepers in the world over the last few seasons, I think he's still been among the top 10 goalkeepers in the world. I think anybody trying to replace a goalkeeper like Petr Cech, even when he's not been at his absolute best, it would be a struggle to upgrade him.
Pedro, you're very close to Roman Abramovich. You often spend time on his yacht. Give us some insight. What sort of thought process, what will he be considering in terms of whether he keeps Robbie Dee as his manager or goes and gets another one?
It's so unfair if Di Matteo goes, isn't it? I think we can all say that from a human point of view. Unfortunately, football and especially Mr. Abramovich aren't known to be particularly human.
Bit harsh.
I don't think he'll stay because, honestly, Roman wants a high-profile manager, and he'll go out and try to get one. I think that's a mistake. Di Matteo has got the best out of the players from an emotional point of view as well, which is, I think he's the first manager to do that from the core since Mourinho, even though Hiddink played that card as well. And that's why all these managers have been able to get so much out of this team, because it's a very emotional team. And I would put Petr Cech in that core group of players that need to feel loved in order to perform. And that's what we've seen with Chelsea at the end of this season, is just self-confidence has gone up, the belief in each other have gone up. And that's something with which André Villas-Boas had destroyed earlier in the year.
Tony, in terms of this big name manager concept that we often hear about, that Mr. Abramovich often gets accused of, is Pedro maybe being a bit harsh there? Because I weigh up how big a name Villas-Boas was, and obviously he was flavor of the month last year, but he'd won a Europa League, a Portuguese title, and a Portuguese cup. Di Matteo has won a promotion. He's won an FA Cup. He may win a Champions League. He's 90 minutes away from doing it. Plus, he was a club legend who's won a bunch of FA Cups as well. In terms of, if we're talking name recognition, I mean, 2 years ago, I don't think anybody knew who Villas-Boas was.
Yeah, but Roman also went on the instinct that Villas-Boas had worked with Mourinho for 4, 5, 6 years. So if he couldn't get the special one back, maybe he could get someone who was close enough to that.
Is that really how the guy's mind works? Like, this guy worked with Mourinho, so he must be like Mourinho?
But he was very successful as well, Gab. He won everything there was to win.
No, I know, but he won everything in one season. But I'm not suggesting, you know, in terms of big name, if Di Matteo wins the Champions League, I mean, what more can he do? He was more, you know.
Well, I think a closer sort of insight into Chelsea's mindset is to remember this time last year. There didn't seem to be any sense of purpose, any sense of targeting a manager to move on with. Then all of a sudden it became Hiddink. You know, Hiddink back. You know, we won Hiddink, and at the last moment they all fell apart, and Villas-Boas came back into the frame. So I don't think Villas-Boas was the first choice, and I think it's. In many ways, there is no long-term strategy there. There's no one out there who would fulfil that big-name superstar manager who's available at the moment. So I think we might see another summer of confusion over at Chelsea. And if Di Matteo ends up staying, it wouldn't surprise me if it's by default.
Well, Ollie, why are you in on that? Because imagine that you are Mr. Big-Name International Manager who's won everything. If Chelsea take financial fair play seriously, and they assure us that they will, and they lost £67 million last year, the reality is even if you do sack Robbie Dee and bring in Mr. Big Name International Manager, where you want to call him Mourinho or Guardiola or whatever, for argument's sake, if he comes in, most people like that want a budget to spend. Most people like that want a multi-year contract. And that's at a time when Chelsea surely need to make more cuts, right?
Yeah, precisely. I think if you're Guardiola or Mourinho, I mean, Mourinho obviously has different issues where Chelsea are concerned. I don't see the appeal at all of working for Chelsea and working for Abramovich. People say that Guardiola could be seduced by the idea of trying to build a Barcelona in West London. I think Abramovich has shown that there is not the culture at Chelsea to give a manager the freedom to do that. I think if Mourinho is... I could imagine Mourinho using Chelsea's interest to get maybe some leverage out of Real Madrid.
Well, he's already then. I mean, reports suggesting, I think unconfirmed as of this morning anyway, that he's done just that. Remember earlier in the year, Mourinho pretending he's coming back to London. I have decided, his little spokespeople coming out.
Let's go home.
Exactly. Yeah. And now, you know, a 4-year deal reportedly, and what comes from one of his guys, through 2016, which kind of sums it up.
Well, let's be honest. You're at Real Madrid. What do we do next? Where can I go that's moving up? It's Chelsea. The reality is, I think we overblow Chelsea, and we overblow Chelsea's global reputation. You know, they're not up there with the Barcelonas and the Real Madrids of this world. They're not even up there with the Manchester Uniteds. You know, they've got an erratic owner who sacks managers at the drop of a hat. The only conceivable reason for going to Chelsea, if you're Guardiola, is if Abramovich backs a security car up against a secure car van up against your house, and as the people start shoveling dollars into your, you know, into your front room, there's no other reason. All this seduced by the idea of trying to build a Barcelona. I've heard some crap in my time.
No, I was dismissing that.
I'm not saying it's true. There are people who say this. Just insanity.
There may also be people who are enticed by the idea of perhaps one day playing at their football at Battersea Power Station, which of course is just across the river from where you live, Tony.
That would be one hell of a stadium. That would be an iconic stadium.
Well, in fact, stadium is a great way to transition, just to wrap this FA Cup final segment up, to Liverpool, who of course have a bit of a stadium issue. As those accounts revealed that they spent £35 million in building their new stadium, which hasn't actually begun yet. I will take a step back and ask you, Ollie, what do you make of all this? Is it a case of Liverpool's current owners saying, all right, let's put all the bad stuff out there in one go so that next year we can hopefully improve upon it? Do Liverpool really need a new stadium to be profitable and compete with Manchester United?
They make something like £70 million less a year than Manchester United out of matchday revenue. That is only going to increase as United's corporate facilities expand and Liverpool's stay where they are. I'm a bit of a romantic about this. I hate the idea of Liverpool or Tottenham or anybody like that leaving the historic stadiums they've got, West Ham similarly. But realistically, Liverpool can't go forward with Anfield as it exists now. I'd love to think there's a way of them expanding Anfield, but it just doesn't seem to exist. So it seems that they need to resolve that. And the chopping and changing and the sort of complete instability at the club over the past decade in terms of the board and the one thing and another means that they're at least 10 years behind schedule with this. It's crazy, really.
Tony, 10 years behind schedule. Can you catch up? Will you ever catch up?
Well, it's going to be a long haul back. And I think this year has shown how far behind they've fallen. And I think perhaps one of the problems last year is when Dalglish took the job and come into it. I think he's the opposite of Roy Hodgson. He's just walking expectation. Everyone believed he could get them back into the top four. The reality is we're a long way off it. And there is no sign of the stadium coming. The owners need to understand that you cannot expand Anfield. It's impossible. The council won't have it. There are right to light issues, and legally it just can't happen.
It says the council won't have it, right? But sorry, the council are elected officials, right? There's a lot of Liverpool. This is part I never understand. There's a lot of Liverpool fans.
This is not America. There are laws to protect people who live around stadiums.
Don't politicians write the laws?
The politicians do write the laws.
And aren't the people who live close to Anfield, correct me if I'm wrong, not exactly the most, A, politically active, and B, wealthy?
But they're extremely politically active. There is a movement around Anfield, which is very vocal in the city.
And not wanting to expand Anfield.
People say to me glibly, there are all those old terraced houses. They go, who'd want to live there? Well, people do. And you can't bulldoze houses and move up between 500 and 1,000 families just to suit the whims of a football club whose owners can't be bothered putting up their own money to build a new stadium. The council will not let Liverpool rebuild Anfield.
From Dalglish to the Premier League, gentlemen, we have a Premier League title race on our hands, and it's kind of exciting. And I guess when City were 8 points back, maybe not that many people expected it. This was the stage at which they were supposed to stumble away from home at St. James Park against a Newcastle United team that had won away themselves at Stamford Bridge. This was where they were supposed to bottle it. Ollie, they didn't.
No, they did the opposite of bottling it. I thought they took the game to a very good Newcastle team right from the start, and when the game dragged on and it was still 0-0, which was a little harsh on City because they played very well, there was a sense perhaps that they might start to get nervous, start to get twitchy and start to question themselves. But a number of their big players, Company, Lescott, Barry, even Aguero, and above all Yaya Toure, just stepped forward and seized the moment. And that is the kind of thing that champions do. I mean, there's still scope for them to mess it up on the final day, but they did not look yesterday like a team that was going to mess it up.
Now, all season long, we talked about mental toughness and so on, and how these City players had never won anything except for Yaya Toure and I suppose Balotelli as well, although he doesn't play much of a part these days. So therefore, we expected them to bottle. Pedro, professional footballers tend to be successful people who've had a lot of success, obviously, in football. Otherwise, they wouldn't be getting to that level and so on. Do you buy, and you're around a lot of athletes, not just footballers, do you buy this mentality that, like, if you've won something, then you're mentally stronger and can win again? Or does this sort of City experience kind of show that actually, if you're a good professional and you have self-belief in yourself, then it doesn't really matter how much silverware you've already won?
I think that winning is a mentality which breeds success. Every player I've talked to, every manager I talk to says the same thing. I think what we have seen here with Manchester City is their squad is just so much better than every other squad that they would have to have really a complete mind freeze to not win the league. I think if anyone bottled it, it was United, and it was because they did not invest in proper central midfielders. They couldn't get an Nemanja Vidic fit all season, and that's why they lost it.
Nemanja Vidic is injured. What's he supposed to do? I mean,
No. What I'm saying,
Fergie's like Dr. McFoy or something. Runs a tricorder.
I'm blaming him for the midfield, which is not good enough for the top three in any major European league. And just before you interrupt me, I will just finally say that this team could have won the title on cruise control. I'm sorry. They are that good on paper where you don't need to be.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Be a fantastic manager to make these guys win.
Tony, I'm interested in what he just said there, because if that's the case, then it seems that, you know, any old Muppet could have won, just about, not everybody, could have won the league with Manchester City. And yet you wrote a column today talking about Mancini and some of his tantrums and whatnot. I mean, do you subscribe to that? Is Mancini's achievement kind of null and void because, you know...
It's not void.
No, not void. But I mean, like, you could have had Mancini there, or you could have had Steve Keen there. They would have still... Maybe not Steve Keen, but you know what I mean. They would have still won the league.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's
And then, by the way, as I say, I've seen in the past tense. They let me just reemphasize: they have not won the league yet.
No,
they're level on points.
You know, it's, they've got one more game to win.
Yeah.
So, but you know, it'd be cheerless to decry Mancini's achievements. I've been critical of him over the past couple of years. I don't think he's the greatest manager who's ever had a team talk, and I think. It is. I agree with Pedro. It's a fantastic squad, and you know, you look at them and you think, why haven't they won the league by more? But I think this season is one of Ferguson's great achievements to keep the squad he's got so close. I mean, you know, this is.
United fans find it very patronizing when somebody with your accent says
stuff
like
that. I don't care what United fans think.
I think Mancini has mismanaged every situation that was presented to him this season. With Carlos Tevez, the way he dealt with that, with Mario Balotelli, with not resting David Silva, and with playing Nasri out of position for most of the season before finally getting it right. So, obviously, not any guy could walk in there and win the league. You'd have to have experience. But I'm sorry if I'm not giving him all the credit that you could for this title.
Or any credit, basically.
I come in here, I try to be nice, but I have to agree with Pedro, because and he's just kicked me over the edge of not being nice, because he's right.
Can
I just ask throw a question out there? Because one thing I was thinking about in the paper today, you know, Mancini's, he's going to win the league, we think. But there's also this sort of air of confrontation and chaos around him. Do you think he's the man to go on and build on a title-winning team and to put, say, three or four title wins in 5 or 6 years?
His record in the Champions League is strangely poor, isn't it? You know, if you look at his record in Italy, he didn't really turn a dominant and successful entity into a team that was a major force in Europe. And you could look at things he got wrong in the Champions League this season with City. But I think the great problem, the great challenge for Mancini has been to try to turn them into champions. And once he does win that battle, if he does win that battle this season, then I think the picture changes slightly, and he will have the authority and within the dressing room to pretty much do as he pleases.
City's dominance, I think, will depend on how other teams strengthen their squads and how much financial fair play comes into it, because right now there's not one team that comes close to having the talent they have. And yes, a victory this year in the title race will probably make them favorites to win again next year. The Champions League, which is obviously what the owners want as well, is something that I don't know whether he's good enough to win.
Amidst all this excitement over Mancini, of course, Newcastle lost the match, and I wonder if with it a chance to reach a Champions League next season. I mean, Arsenal and Spurs, of course, both drew, which didn't help. Just want to have a quick predictive whip round and get who your choices are for third and fourth. Starting with you, Ollie.
I think.
Okay, we'll come back to you, Ollie.
No. I think things will stay as they are. I think Arsenal will win next weekend. I think Spurs will probably win next weekend, and it will be those two, third and fourth. And whether or not fourth is good enough to get into the Champions League, ultimately, we will see.
Tony?
I think it'll be the same too. I think it'll be Arsenal and Tottenham. Just judging by Chelsea's performance in the cup final, I think fourth will be good enough to get into the Champions League.
Ooh. I agree with both. I'll go again. I agree with Tony on both counts. Both London sides making it in. Newcastle, great run, great season from Alan Pardew. Just a shame for them that they really couldn't get it done at home. One thing I didn't understand was how you take off Ben Arfa, the only player who can make a difference in midfield in a game they wanted to win. But great, great run by the Magpies. Europa League as a transition will be good enough for anyone, if you ask up their fans up there.
We need to move on now before I get very angry that you indirectly dissed Yoann Cabaye, one of my favorite players this year. And I think you'll find he can make a difference in midfield, and he often does. From the Premier League to the sublime now, Lionel Messi scored another 4 goals at the weekend. He's taken his seasonal tally to 72 goals, of which 50 in the league, which, when I was a kid, when you were a kid, Tony, if you scored 20 league goals, like, you were incredible.
different times. And to be fair, before we get the Madridistas angry at us, we should give a shout-out to Cristiano Ronaldo, who, of course, he's only scored 59 this year in all competitions. When Messi scored, was it 55 or 56 last year, we thought, like, whoa, this is insane. I'll never be bettered. But Ronaldo bettered it this year, and Messi, of course, went beyond that. Ronaldo also 45 league goals. These are just... These are basically PlayStation numbers, and what we wanted to drive at is, has there been some kind of, and I'm going to turn to you, Tony, because you've had the opportunity to watch more great players than the rest of us have. Has there been some kind of paradigm shift, or are these two guys just so much better than anybody else you've ever seen?
Well, I think they're very, very good players, and they're clearly the best two players in the world now. But I mean, when one player does something that's as outrageous and breaks records, you can see they're clearly head and shoulders above anyone. When two people do it, you do wonder whether there's a pattern emerging there. And I think these are two very, very fine players. As I say, the best two players in the world. But I think they're in a league where the standards are not that great at the lower ends, and there's a bit of flat track bullying going on.
22 goals Messi has scored it's not 22 in the Champions League, is it? Was it 14?
14.
14 goals Leo Messi has scored in the Champions League. I mean, he's eclipsed the record for the European Cup and the Champions League, Tony. And I think most would agree the standard of the Champions League is higher now than it was in the 70s and 80s, right?
No, because only title winners win, and you didn't have the group games where you could just pad your goals. You know, it's where, frankly, some of the group games are really poor.
But that's fine. The flip side of the 70s and 80s, you only had one team from every country.
Yeah, you did. And, you know,
so now you've got more better teams.
Well, and often you went out earlier if you're drawn against them in a free draw. You know, it's and you know, you say, I mean, there were some good teams that perhaps went under people's radar. You know, like the Dynamo Kiev teams and things like that. So, I mean, I think the game's changed, and I think that the format of the game makes it easier to break these records. But you know, I don't want to diminish the ability of either Messi or Ronaldo, but I don't think these are the best two ever. I think we've seen better players in the game. And, I think if Diego Maradona was playing that Barcelona team now, he'd break all the records. And I suspect he'd score a few less, actually. But the rest of the team would score more.
And they'd be a better team, yeah.
These two are sublime. They're having a season that you can only compare to aliens that have come down from another planet.
And bear in mind, we said that last season, too, after the season they had last season.
Yeah, it's amazing, but they still don't make it into my top three of all time, being Maradona, Pelé, and Zidane, because they haven't turned it on in a big tournament and won a big tournament yet. Okay. And that's the asterisk. That's the asterisk so far for these guys. They're incredible, the best by far of this generation. However, we have to judge it when they retire, and we have to put it into perspective.
Ollie, I'm not going to ask you about where they rank with the greats, but I want to get from you. It just feels uncomfortable for me, almost, this insane goal scoring. It just doesn't seem right. It seems out of whack. And you and I are of a similar age, and we looked at the numbers that, you know, in the 80s, we were used to something. Have you asked yourself how these two guys, yes, they're scoring more, but they're also, it's like they're scoring a lot more, and it's not as if anybody else is. Have you wrapped your head around this? Does it say is anything about them tactically? Also, neither one, of course, a traditional center forward.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point. I mean, you generally associate enormous goal scoring records with a sort of Romario figure or an Alan Shearer type figure. Not the kind of, I mean, you look at what kind of player the two of them are. Ronaldo used to be a winger and you know, a winger with an individual streak, but you know, he's not the kind of player who you would think would be a penalty box poacher. Nor is Messi. You look at Messi, he's a, you know, he it's not like he only scores goals. He does everything. He links the play. He's just sensational. He lays on almost as many as he scores, it seems, at times. And I know that there will be an argument that...
Actually, sorry, just so again, because the Real Madrid fans will just bombard you on Twitter. I think Ronaldo has more... Okay. Just to save you preemptively from the Real Madrid fans who will stalk you on Twitter, Ronaldo, I believe, has more assists this season than Messi does.
Interesting. But I think one thing people will often say about this is that, oh, well, modern rules allow people to, you know, allow attacking players to shine and to score, you know, enormous amounts of goals. But Premier League last season, I think Berbatov and Tevez were the leading scorers with about 18, was that right?
Yeah.
It's not as if... you look across the Champions League, and obviously Gomez has scored a lot of goals for Bayern, but these guys, Ronaldo and Messi, are outscoring everybody. It's not just a case of La Liga being weak, and you look at Europa League and the success of Real and in Champions League, Barcelona in Champions League, you know, Bilbao and Madrid and others in the Europa League. It's a strong league. I don't, but some people in England like to disparage it, saying it's just like Scotland, but with the sunshine. It's not that at all. It's a strong league. Maybe there's a culture of fear among the weaker teams when they go 3 or 4 nil down to them. Maybe that's when Ronaldo and Messi score a lot of their goals, but...
Here's my problem. I can't wait to see them face off against each other in Munich, you know, later on this month. Oh, hang on. You know, I mean, it's... The great players elevate their teams and drag everyone up around them. Maradona made everyone on the pitch better. Everyone on his side better.
How many times did he win a European Cup?
Well... Fair enough, yeah. But I think
he only got to play in it twice, though. To be fair, three times.
And I think World Cups rather trump that one, you know. But I mean, the thing is, these two are great players, but you know, there is a sense of, you know, with Messi's support and cast, you would expect them to be scoring more.
Well,
you'd expect them to be dominating more.
Look, Tony, because I would. I mean, leaving aside, obviously, the semifinals, I mean, both teams, I think, went out by a very narrow margin. But in Barcelona over the last 3 years, I think, have shown that they can win Champions Leagues. But and Real Madrid have broken records domestically in the Liga this year. But you don't think that they make their teams better? I got the sense that perhaps this year, especially Barcelona, perhaps a little more dependent on Messi than in previous years. And Real Madrid as well. I mean, we don't often get to see them without Cristiano on the pitch, but I'm not sure we want to see them without Cristiano on the pitch.
I think both of those teams are almost, you know, set up to make those two players shine, and I think I think there's different things going on with them. I think Messi doesn't have the game intelligence that Maradona has, the awareness of what people are doing around him, and I think Cristiano Ronaldo is more selfish than Maradona. He kind of doesn't care what the players around him are doing. He's doing his thing. And I think that those two narrow margins are what stops them from being up there with the true greats.
How about some quick hits? Arsenal are held to a 3-3 home draw by Norwich. Tony, there were individual mistakes, there were collective mistakes, there were controversial incidents, but ultimately, why is it that we're always left with a notion that this Arsenal team simply doesn't defend well?
How about because they simply don't defend well? Arsenal's under Wenger, it's been one of the themes, isn't it? They've got leads, they've thrown them away.
But it's getting worse, isn't it?
It's getting worse, and you know, and he certainly needs to address it. But yeah, they don't defend well.
I'll pitch in on this quick hits by saying it's not just the defence, it's the centre of midfield that doesn't protect them enough. And Alex Song, who is a great player, gets to the end of every season and he's dragging his legs because he just can't take it anymore.
Mm. All right, enough picking on Wenger. Let's pick on somebody else now. Manchester United defeat Swansea, but there's a sense that the title has slipped away. Ollie, what did you make of Sir Alex's post-game speech? And should we be mischievous and read something into the fact that with 12 minutes to go, Wayne Rooney was taken off the pitch?
Well, in terms of the substitution, it looked to me like, watching it through the corner of my eye in the Newcastle press room, it looked like Rooney was substandard as he has been quite often over the last 4 or 5 weeks. He scored a lot of goals, penalties in particular, but he's not been on song. And when they needed goals and to rack up the goal difference, Ferguson took him off, which is intriguing. In terms of what Ferguson said afterwards, it sounded a little bit clutching at straws, a little bit desperate, a little bit of a desperate reminder to Mark Hughes of how he was sacked in an unethical way, supposedly, by Manchester City. But I'm sure we'll hear more of the same over the course of the week.
I love the way he communicates with Mark Hughes via 72,000 United fans at Old Trafford. Spurs slip up 2, drawing at Aston Villa as Danny Rose is sent off. Pedro, we've heard a bunch of theories for Spurs' late season collapses. Might as well hear yours as well.
I have 2. The first is lack of rotation, depending too much on the same players to do the same job day in and day out. And the second is not having a plan B, i.e. playing with 2 strikers, considering they always had someone like Defoe or Pavlyuchenko or even Saha, who I know is always injured. But give a chance for 2 strikers to be up there and you'll give other teams more to do.
That, of course, involves dropping somebody, but I guess we'll get to that next time. With that draw, Aston Villa are staying up. But it's a turbulent week at Villa Park, with fans taking out newspaper ads calling for Alex McLeish's resignation and 3 first-team players, if that's what you want to call Mr. Hurd and Mr. Delph, deciding it would be a good idea to get drunk after the team awards dinner and get into a fight into a nightclub. 2 questions for you, Tony. If you were Big Ek, would you have started Hurd and Collins, 2 of these alleged miscreants? And also, why were Villa having an awards dinner in the first place after the season they've had?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't have started them. I would have fined them, and I would have kicked the backside so hard that they'd be into the middle of next week. And an awards dinner for Villa. I think that's misguided, to say the least. I don't think McLeish will be there next year, and I think Lerner has made a huge number of bad decisions, and that's a club in real crisis.
If I were cheesier than I am, I might say it's time for Randy to learn something. Heartbreak from Owen Coyle as they throw away a 2-goal lead and are held at home by West Brom. Ollie, could Mr. Coyle have done anything differently? And while we're at it, since we haven't had you on the podcast since his appointment, how about you give us your 10-second verdict on the New England boss?
Well, Bolton first. To concede a 2-0 lead in the last 10 minutes of a home game, critical home game at the end of the season, looks pretty terrible. I thought, looking at the goals, there was a missed 50-50 challenge by Mark Davis in the penalty area for the first, and Kevin Davis played Morrison onside for the second. I mean, it's very small margins, isn't it? And it seemed like Bolton didn't have bodies on the line that were going to make the difference. And Roy Hodgson, I think you're asking too much for me to condense that to 10 seconds.
That's right. Well, the whole rest of the world's had their say, so if you want to see what Ollie thinks, I'm sure you can find him online. It took a late goal from Gibril Cissé, but QPR's 1-0 win over Stoke keeps their survival hopes alive. Pedro, we've crucified Cissé for his red cards, but if this goal keeps him up, surely it would all have been worth it, right?
I'll borrow a line from Forrest Gump and say Gibril Cissé is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. He can do the best, he can do the worst. I think it will be worth it because Cissé is someone who, when you don't expect it, can come through in the clutch just like he can destroy you. But yeah, it's all worth it. Cissé would be better than any other striker they could have got at that point in the year.
Gabba, I believe we've got new champions in Italy. What's that all about?
That's right. It's Juventus, a full 6 years after Calciopoli won the title at the weekend. They beat Cagliari 2-0, while AC Milan, who could have kept it going another week had they won the derby against Inter, somehow lost 4-2 in an incredible game, which really had everything: confrontation, refereeing mistakes, a goal line incident, a ridiculous goal from Maicon. Really, really very entertaining match. But I mean, the big news is Juve, they're on their way back. I think even their biggest enemies have missed them, and I for one am excited to see them in the Champions League next season. That's all we've got time for this week. But before I let you go, a quick reminder that we're doing another live roadshow with me and only me, delivering a one-hour monologue. No, just kidding. I'll be joined by very special guests. It's going to be at the Freemasons Arms near Covent Garden in London on May 29th from 7 p.m. And you can book your tickets at www.timestickets.co.uk. Or you can call 0871-620-4025. It'll cost you about £7.50 per person, and I will do my best to make sure you feel you got your money's worth. In the meantime, you can go to thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis, and also our web chats. And of course, you can follow us all on Twitter as well. I'm on there. Pedro, you want to give us your Twitter handle?
At PedroCNN.
At PedroCNN. There you go. And you know the other ones. It's at
Tony Evans Times.
And at Oliver K. Times. Is that right?
It is.
There you go. Till next time. Bye-bye.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.